You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 10th of October 2016 on Monocle 24.
You're tuned to Midori House, coming to you live from London on Monocle 24. Coming up,
I've heard from lots of teachers and parents about some of their concerns about some of the things that are being said and done in this campaign. And I think it is very important for us to make clear to our children that our country really is great because we're good. And we are going to respect one another, lift each other up.
Hillary Clinton aims for the high road during the first few moments of Sunday's debate, but was it all downhill from there? We'll review what was a largely policy-free zone. Also ahead,
this is suggesting sexual assault, and
that's a very unfortunate phrase, and people really should stop using that.
Why?
Because I know him better, and I know better.
But it's what he said.
Donald Trump's campaign manager, Kellyanne Conway, tries to hose down suggestions that the Republican nominee was boasting over a sexual assault. And back home in London, former Labour leader Ed Miliband wants Parliament to vote on Brexit. We'll ask whether he's dreaming. That's all today on Midori House, live from London with me, Andrew Tuck. Well, welcome to Midori House. We're live from Studio One. My guests today are Daniela Peled, acting managing editor for the Institute of War and Peace Reporting, and Xenia Wickett, who's the head of the US and Americas programme and dean of the Queen Elizabeth II Academy at Chatham House. Welcome both to the programme. First today, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump faced off last night in this year's second US presidential debate. Here's some of what was said.
Trump says the campaign has changed him. When did that happen? So, Mr. Trump, let me add to that. When you walked off that bus at age 59, were you a different man, or did that behavior continue until just recently? And you have 2 minutes for this.
As I told you, that was locker room talk. I'm not proud of it. I am a person who has great respect for people, for my family, for the people of this country, and certainly I'm not proud of it, but that was something that happened. If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it, but Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attack them viciously, four of them here tonight. One of the women, who is a wonderful woman, at 12 years old, was raped at 12. Her client, she represented, got him off, and she's seen laughing on two separate occasions, laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman, is here with us tonight. So don't tell me about words. I apologize for those words. But it is things that people say. But what President Clinton did, he was impeached. He lost his license to practice law. He had to pay an $850,000 fine to one of the women, Paula Jones, who's also here tonight. And I will tell you that when Hillary brings up a point like that, and she talks about words that I said 11 years ago, I think it's disgraceful, and I think she should be ashamed of herself, if you want to know the truth.
Can we please hold the applause? Secretary Clinton, you have 2 minutes.
Well, first, let me start by saying that so much of what he's just said is not right, but he gets to run his campaign any way he chooses. He gets to decide what he wants to talk about. Instead of answering people's questions, talking about our agenda, laying out the plans that we have that we think can make a better life and a better country, that's his choice. When I hear something like that, I am reminded of what my friend Michelle Obama advised us all. When they go low, you go high.
Well, a clip from last night's presidential debate, which was moderated by Anderson Cooper and also by Martha Raddatz. Well, we heard from Mr. Trump there attempting to set the tone, and it was a rather low tone. Did he succeed, Zenia?
Did he succeed in setting a low tone?
Well, no, did he succeed in changing the agenda, I guess, because we'd come into this debate with a real kind of sense that, you know, he was on the back foot. You know, we'd had this horrible, horrible clip played of him talking on, you know, about women and about, you know, the way that he treated women. And he wanted to divert that. And he came in fighting and redirecting against Bill Clinton.
So he did a couple of things. I mean, absolutely. Certainly the feedback that one gets coming out of the debate yesterday is that it was a draw, which essentially means it was a Bush win because people have lower expectations for him than they do for Hillary Clinton. That win, if you will, or that draw...
I think you mean a Trump win rather than a Bush win.
Bush, yes. Thank you very much for that clarification. A Trump win based on the fact that Trump and Clinton drew. And so... He has managed to, at least we believe, he has managed to slightly change the conversation. The momentum that was very much going in Clinton's favor and had been for really since the first debate, there is some reason to believe that at least he's slowed the hemorrhage. We have not seen more Republicans come out today saying we're no longer with him. Which we did see. We had, I think, 51 senior Republicans come out and say, OK, that's it. I can't go any further. With the possible exception of Paul Ryan, who I think did release further information today saying, I want nothing to do with this man.
And I think he said, you know, go to your, you know, constituents and fight, you know, fight your lone battles. Don't be caught up in
this. But, I mean, there is a sense that at least the momentum that was working against him of the last 10 days or so has slowed. Whether it has reversed or not, I think, is a very different question. And we won't know the answer to that until we see the polls in about 10 days. But there's no question that he has, if not changed the debate, I think that would be going too far. He has at least bandaged up some of the worst of the expectations last night. Not least because people said, well, okay, you know what? He kept his temper. He was mostly sensible.
But that prowling behind her, that was, you know, and you've just been accused of, you know, saying that you potentially have sexually assaulted someone. That prowling, that was predator behaviour, wasn't it?
But she also did a certain amount of, not behind him, but a certain amount of moving onto his side of the stage. I mean, there was a whole load of psychological games being played on both sides. But what we, you know, there's every sense that he's come out of that. You know, what he needed was, and what he continues to need in the final debate, is to be seen to be presidential. He needs to convince people that if he wants to, he can pull it out of the bag and he can do it. He went some of the way towards doing that. It could have gone so horribly wrong given where the media was. And he actually managed to keep his temper and keep himself in check. And if you look at the text, the transcript from the second debate over the first debate, I mean, there were periods in the first debate where he clearly wasn't making sense. I mean, there were, you know, tirades that went on for a good couple of minutes where he clearly wasn't making sense. You didn't see that in this one. He really stuck to his bullet points. So, yes, I think it was a win for him.
Daniela, is he perhaps right? You know, actually, has Bill Clinton been given with time a kind of a sheen and gloss and, you know, made an elder statesman and for, you know, being forgiven for all kinds of predatory behaviour that we know happened in the White House? And, you know, here he is saying, well, you know, I made some, you know, rather revolting comments, but, you know, in comparison, you know, there's no difference. And why is it that, you know, I'm being attacked when he's not?
Well, first of all, these are actions the relevance to Hillary Clinton, who is so much more than the sum of the
wife. Well, he claims that she bullied the woman in defence of her husband.
And one of the things which he raised, which was incredibly low, was the idea that she was the defence lawyer for the accused rapist. When, of course, even an accused rapist has the right to a defence. I mean, it was exceptionally low, gaspingly low. That's, I think, his nuclear option as far as Clinton go. I mean, he's hinted at this. He really pulled out all the guns when it came
but
to
But don't you think it's amazing what Xenia says? And she's right. You know, he kind of did come across in this weird way as almost presidential. But how have we got to the point where you can release a tape about a guy like this and he's still seen as kind of presidential?
He didn't come across as presidential. But, I mean, then this is the fundamental problem. Our expectations for him were so low that the fact that he managed to keep his temper in check, the fact that he managed to actually respond mostly to the questions, not always, and he was able to do so in a coherent way, the fact that he was actually able to bring out some policy ideas.
Very vaguely, with the policy ideas. But that is a success.
That's how we're measuring success for Trump at the moment, because our expectations are so low. And that's one of the fundamental problems, because our expectations for Hillary are a whole lot higher.
I think that his success is that he didn't lose the debate on an enormous basis. He may have slowed the hemorrhage of his support, which counts as a win. Whether he managed to win over any of the undecided voters, that's another question, which the polls may reveal. But I mean, it was personality, a battle of personalities. Policy made very, very little entry to it, and he only manages to really hold his own when he is doing the whole Trump personality shtick. When it comes to policy, he wobbles so enormously that it's embarrassing to see.
And just on a minor point, as Amy said, again, he did make much more sense this time than the previous time. But even just listening to that clip, he is the most peculiar orator. You know, that it's broken up by these sniffs that you don't know what they're about. He kind of loses, he mangles his words. How is it that somebody who is, you know, and again, this, we should shine the spotlight on Hillary in a moment, because you know, why it must be something really awful has gone on in American politics that somebody who is a terrible orator, you know, a misogynist, borderline, says things that are certainly racist, has this cut through with actually a voter who is, you know, he's not a terrible person, but who feels so dislodged from the political system that even now, after all this, and I was hearing women at the weekend on TV saying, I just forgive him, that's just who he is. How is it that she is so polarizing as well that it's left this room for him to continue?
I tell you, I cannot wait till we get to the point where we actually can do a sort of post-factual analysis on how we got to this position and what exactly it was that induced so many millions of people to support him. And I don't know whether it's the media coverage that I've seen from here has not yet managed to explain it to me. I've seen an awful number of articles basically dismissing Trump supporters as somehow mentally deficient and just 100% redneck, and I don't think that explains the phenomenon. I mean, his lack of his inability to be articulate, I think, feeds into his appeal, because he goes on the populist idea. He is a man of the people. He's an ordinary guy. He's not polished. He says what he thought. You know, he can talk about locker room talk, for instance. Whereas Clinton, with all her obvious experience and all her obviously finesse, she speaks to the elite. She is party of the elite. It's hard to imagine someone who would be more elite than her. And I think there's a yawning chasm between them helps to explain the situation we're in now.
But I was just pointing out for both of you women, I was pointing out this on the show this morning, in the locker room that I go to, the worst thing you hear is someone saying, oh, I've dropped some shampoo on my shirt. There is none of this going on. His version of what masculinity is like is crazy. We had a very interesting interview earlier on today with Thomas Frank, who came in to talk about his book, Listen Liberal. And he made a very good point. He said, you know, he's obviously fighting for the liberal corner, but he said, you know, the reason we're in this mess is because actually, when you look back, Obama has not been a good president. Obama has done too many things carrying on the Bush legacy. He has not looked after the working class voter. They turned their back on organized labor. At many points along the juncture, both the Clintons and Bush let down the black community. All sorts of people have been thrown out along the route, and you've ended up with a very elitist Democratic Party who doesn't know how to talk to the ordinary voter, and that's why she is being pummeled. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's partly fair, absolutely. But you have to remember, this is happening not just in the United States. I mean, you know, globalization has been this incredible force for however many decades, but it's certainly sped up in the last couple of decades. And yet our ability to put in place policies that protect those who don't see the advantages of globalization, who lose out by globalization, have been pretty minimal. And if you look, you combine the trend of globalization with the incredible partisanship in the United States, you then start saying to yourself, well, okay, it's very, very hard to get any policies in place because it's very hard to get the Republicans and the Democrats to agree upon something. So we still continue to have arguments about, taxation versus spending. We have discretionary funds getting smaller and smaller that allows politicians to actually spend them on things that are really needed, like education for the young or even training for people who are losing their jobs. And so you have this globalization trend that is bringing huge advances, but also very much being a cost for some individuals who are losing out. You don't have the kind of spending and the kind of response due to the partisanship in the United States that you'd need to remedy some of the costs for some of these individuals. And on top of that, over the last 8 years, you've had an incredible recession, which means that money is even tighter than it once was. More people are losing jobs. And is it any great surprise that you've got a huge disenfranchised population on both the right and the left, the Bernie Sanders voters and the Donald Trump voters, who are saying, you know what, that's enough. I don't want somebody who looks like what I've had before because you haven't done the job for me. And you're seeing this in the United States. You're seeing this across Europe.
The this United Kingdom as well.
Yeah, very exactly. So.
Can I ask you both an interesting question, which I think it'd be interesting to know both your viewpoints. We tend to see politics in black and white. There's the good, the bad, you're all right, you're wrong. And we can see with Trump, he paints himself into so many corners. Are you confident, Daniela, that Clinton is the good candidate? Because she dodges this question around her emails. We know her support for her husband. We know that some of the things that she got involved with in taking on power for during her time in the administration meant she had to take all sorts of compromising decisions. Are you confident that she is the good candidate?
Well, 8 years ago, like many people, I was full of great hope and excitement about Obama, who seemed to be this amazing breath of fresh air, especially after the Bush administration. And like Zinnia said, he really hasn't. He's been a disappointing president.
Loved internationally, but maybe by the likes
ways.
Of us.
Even loved that much internationally. No. He is considered to be an unreliable ally to many in Asia and Europe.
And I think that the major...
But you're skirting around the question. Do you think that she is a virtuous, good politician?
Isn't that a complete oxymoron? No, he seemed
I'm just
trying
to push you a bit here.
He seemed to be this bright new light. We all had great expectations. They were
but her, not him.
They were well. I think with Clinton, I think the point is you need to be realistic. I'm not expecting her to be somehow wave a magic wand and solve Syria and solve the rest of the problems in the Middle East and solve the economy. I think the fact I think some of the aspects of her, which is seen as negative, actually possibly positive in a president. And even if she was up against a more reasonable Republican candidate, I think that she is a. I think she's a reasonable candidate for president.
Reasonable isn't a ringing endorsement, but Zinnia, honest and reliable?
I think that the state of politics today in the United States is pretty horrific. I think that if you look at recent candidates, they have not been the epitome of perfection on either side of the aisle. So the Republicans, I remember when we had then Senator Kerry running against Bush, and everybody kind of looked at the both of them and went, oh my, is this the best we can do? What I care about is whether she'll be an effective president. I think she'd probably be a pretty effective president. There certainly are aspects of her personality that we may not like. We may not want to sit around the dining room table with her, but will she actually be effective? She's shown that she can work across the aisle far more effectively than Obama. She has shown that she actually can get stuff done with the Republicans if they're willing to step up. She understands politics in a way that President Obama didn't when he took office.
But don't you think this is the fascinating nub of it? Because here we have like two smart women sitting in the studio who, you're not going to be affected by policies to do with income tax or anything like that. You're just looking at their global outlook, these candidates. And I'm sure you're not going to vote for Trump. But you have the same qualms that American voters have. They people cannot say 100%.
But can you on anybody?
No,
you
of
really?
Course not. Of course not. The point is
Andrew,
that...
I think you're wonderful, but I don't think you're 100% the best.
we'll talk about that after.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I think...
Maybe I'm wrong. What can I say?
Clinton isn't likable. She's not likable. You know, as you said, we don't want to have dinner with her necessarily. It might be interesting.
Actually.
But Obama was Obama was super likable. Obama was super likable. That did not go far enough.
And I will say this. I've met her once and I was blown out of the water. And the people I know who know her well say she is incredibly loyal, incredibly likable. So she is, I mean, and everybody will admit, including many on her team, will say she's a pretty bad candidate. She doesn't do candidate well, but actually she would make a pretty good president. And I think most people, including on the Republican side that I talk to, say, you know, they may not like her policies, but they think she'll make a pretty good president.
And just sifting these two people, on the point of the media and the role of the media here, you know, these... Yeah, we've seen here in Europe all of these, you know, these TV debates, and they become horrific kind of wrestling matches. They're gory. I don't know what people take out from them. And even today, there was a piece in the New York Times saying, you know, mea culpa, we have not done our role as the media. We should have been asking better questions. We should have helped shape this narrative. In the blame game of why this hasn't been about politics and why this hasn't been about, you know, getting the policies explained, do you think the media has failed?
Well, somehow the mainstream media has become part of the elite, apparently. And this is more, I mean, this is something that's raised over and over again in our own populist political struggle here in the UK. It's hard to get a view from the UK. But as I said, I think that the depiction of the Trump voter or the Trump phenomenon has not been particularly elucidating. There has been, the coverage has been of these marginalised, quite stupid people who have very, very little reason to be dissatisfied with their lot. It hasn't been explained to me still. I still don't understand it. I mean, it's a complex issue. But beyond putting it down to populism, I think we could have done better.
Senya, again, an interesting point. So when you think about ordinary, you know, voters in America who feel a little bit, you know, thrown out by the system, they have been made campaign promises and then maybe promises by politicians and all sorts of people. And in the end, what they see coming through, they don't believe in, and they feel they've been let down. And they see the media as part of that. So they don't believe what the media is telling them. Do you think that's why this was an interesting moment the weekend? Because there was no disputing it. It wasn't kind of you had a clip. You know, he said it was him. He admitted he said those words. But this was one of the very few times you could actually, you know, pin the tail on the donkey, as it were, and say, you said this, you are responsible, now account for it. Because that's very rare in this campaign.
I disagree entirely. I mean, I think there are numerous cases that you can pin the donkey on and say, you said this, you know, and he denies them hotly. I mean, what's different this time is he actually, I think for the first time, he apologised for it. Now, I don't know whether you've seen the apology, yeah. But it's an interesting apology. But nevertheless, that is far further than he's gone before. And that's the only bit that's different. But here's the thing, and it kind of picks up the same point, which is, the core of Trump supporters, as you were saying earlier, Andrew, they don't care. They know this, but they just don't care. And the only question for the people who are following the polls and the people sitting in the campaigns are, he needs independents. He needs people from the middle and or Republicans who at the moment aren't turning up to vote for him. And can he get them after the comments on the weekend? And the answer is... for people who can dissociate the man from the policies, yes, he'll get them. Because if you look at what he's done over the last couple of months, he's really, where he's come out with policies, they are mainstream, traditional Republican policies versus Clinton's, and I'm hugely, not exaggerating, I'm generalizing here, mainstream, traditional Democratic policies. And for people who are not liberal, you know, they're quite conservative, they are conservative fiscally as well as in social matters, actually, they will close their eyes to his rhetoric. They will close their eyes to his persona because they will vote for the policies that he's coming forward with. And that's what he, back to where we started this debate, that's what he needs to do, is to actually convince people that that's what he's going
to be. I should
bring
Daniel in here, but you know, quickly, just because I know this is your number-crunching brain will have looked at this, but you know, the snapshot polls afterwards gave... Actually, I was surprised. Both gave it... But the two I've seen have both given it to Hillary by a reasonably large margin. Pre the debate, they were saying still, you know, Hillary was way ahead. We know that it's, you know, a state-by-state battle. Is your feeling he has lost it? Or do you still think it's in play?
So I was calling it last Thursday, and I will acknowledge absolutely that most of the people who are in my positions who follow this closely are saying that they think Hillary will win. I was calling it for Trump last Thursday because I think there's a lot that we're not getting in the polls. It is too early to tell. But if you look at the numbers, she is 3 to 6 points ahead, depending on which polls you look at. Those take into consideration the first debate, but they don't take into consideration what happened over the weekend. If you look at the states that matter, she's well ahead in Pennsylvania. I think she's 6 points ahead in Pennsylvania. But Ohio, North Carolina, Florida... It's between evens and a couple of points ahead, which means that it's in the variable that could go either way.
So potentially a President Trump here.
Absolutely.
I think we will have a very rich and full debate here on Monocle 24 for many years to come, if that's the case. Danielle, your feeling from the people you speak to and your gut instinct, where would you call it for?
My feeling, also my hopes and dreams.
Hope. We had that from Obama. It didn't work out.
Yes, right. No, I think Clinton, finally, I think she'll win it. But I think the margin is going to be interesting to see. And I think then, as I was saying, the analysis afterwards, the dissection of what happened, what went wrong, and how... she's now going to deal with America as it stands today. That's going to be interesting.
Well, there was a huge bit that we should have picked up about Mr. Bush's involvement in this. But just at the very end of the show, we did say that we'd touch on the subject of Brexit here in the UK, a bit of a gear change. The former leader of the Labour Party in the UK wants there to be some kind of vote on the deal that happens. And while many people think it's fanciful, Daniela, should there be a vote? Because, you know, the terms of what happened were never discussed, really. You know, we were sold a whole load of kind of baloney, and now something has to be made a decision about. And the idea is that Theresa May, the new PM for the UK, will make all those decisions kind of, in the end, on her own.
I don't think it's fanciful. I think it's very far from fanciful. The referendum was... a blunt weapon, and there was decision. But the actual parameters of what that involves and what that means for the single market and so on, that wasn't included at all. I think what's interesting now is there's a coalition of British MPs, cross-party, and also from the Remain and from the Leave campaigns, who are saying, no, there should be some parliamentary scrutiny on the actual process. I'm curious as to how that will be avoided. I mean, to me, it seems fairly logical.
A Guardian ICM poll today gave 17-point lead to the Tories over Labour. She just doesn't need to listen to anyone, does she?
She doesn't need... Well, politicians always need to listen to people. I mean, 17 points, yes, that can go awfully quickly. You know, and what is clear is while there is huge support for Corbyn, that support isn't pervasive, certainly amongst the MPs, Labour MPs. And so you can imagine a scenario where that 17 points disappears very, very quickly. So no, she does have to listen. But she also, I mean, to pick up Daniela's point, you know, there is a pretty valid question there about, you know, as Daniela says, that was a blunt instrument, and actually there needs to be choices and there needs to be an opportunity to make a judgment call on those choices. And what people voted for in a part was to bring sovereignty back to the United Kingdom. And sovereignty means not actually having one individual who makes choices for you, but actually having a process by which others can affect those choices. So I think I don't see how she does it and maintains control. And that's the real question.
Well,
I think she'll try.
Who knew that Ed Miliband would become the man that we rallied behind? That seems another kind of mythical outcome. But anyway, thank you both very much for joining us. Of course, that was Daniela Pellard and Xenia Wickett, who have been here with me on Midori House. And today's show, well, it was produced by Ben Ryland. It was researched by Gaia Lutz and also by Gal Banea. And our studio manager was Kieran Banerjee. More music next, then at 1900 hours, it's Culture with Mr. Robert Bound. And we'll also have more on the day's main stories. I would imagine a little bit of Trump too on the Monocle Daily at 2200 hours London time. Midori House is back at the very same time tomorrow. That's 1800 hours London time. But for me, Andrew Tuck, thank you very much for listening and goodbye.